FM with Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
And a very good evening from Damien O'Mara. Thank you very much to Jenny Green for the last couple of hours. It is Monday, the 28th of June. This is Game On. Coming up between now and 7 o'clock, Stephen Kelly and Alan Collier here in studio as Croatia and Spain serves up yet another own goal at Euro 2020.
Oh my goodness me! Croatia take the lead with the Highlander to beat them all. What on earth happened there?
Too much possession, George. Oh my God, can't believe it.
Well, that's going to go in the highlights reel for all the wrong reasons.
We will tell you exactly what happened in a moment. We're going to round up the weekend's action in Gaelic games as well. Niall Moran and Aidan O'Rourke going to join us as Seven Counties exit the football championship. And Tony Kelly yet again delivers for the Clare Hurlers.
That's a Tony Kelly's on the scene, not an easy man to stop. Kelly's up to the 20. Kelly sends it over. And that might just be Clare over the line here now.
Yeah, class act. 112, his fifth point from play. But it was just the dogginess to go in. Everyone was trying to win it. Kelly just goes in, flicks it up, and really sharp grip over the back. From 20 yards out, super score.
With all that plus the rest of the day's news, you can text us our number 51552. You can tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Stephen Kelly and Alan Cawley with me in studio. Gentlemen, good evening to you both.
Evening, Damien.
Evening.
Stephen, you never beat your own goalkeeper from, what are we going to say, Alan?
A good 40 yards, 50 yards, yeah.
I'll never beat any goalkeeper from that distance before.
We heard the commentary from George and Kenny. The game is live on RTE2 television. 47 minutes play, Croatia 1, Spain 1. Alan, you have analysed this to within an inch of its life in studio with me over the last while. Paint us the picture of the most horrendous own goal we'll see at this tournament.
It is the most horrendous, not just at this tournament, Damien. I think it'll be one of the most horrendous that we'll ever see. But for it to happen at this level is probably the most surprising thing. And obviously Spain were dominating the game. Spain are actually being really good tonight, playing very, very well. But for the first 15-20 minutes, totally dominating the game. But for some reason, the ball is played into Pedri in his own half, fairly comfortable possession, but he decides to play a ball back to his goalkeeper. To be fair, there was a bit of pace on it. If we have any sympathy for the goalkeeper, there was a bit of pace on it. But as he went, put his right foot out to control it, Damien, the most basic skill in the book that we've all been taught since we were obviously kids, it just rolled over the goalkeeper's foot and went into the net, as you say, from 40 yards. Even Croatia themselves didn't know what to do or how to celebrate. But it was a horrendous mistake, as I say, to make it this level. But they showed a lot of character after that, Spain. And as I say, they have played very, very well. They got themselves back into the game. And prior to that, they had created a couple of chances as well. But they got themselves back into the game, created another three or four chances, and eventually they made the breakthrough and saved the goalkeeper's blushes and went in 1-1 at half time.
But you look at it, Stephen, like the Spain have rebounded really well. They were a bit shaky there for a couple of minutes after it, but you would be looking at this saying at half time there's only really one team, you know, that you would fancy to go on and win it, and it's Spain if things click.
Yeah, they've regrouped really well. Like I said, Croatia had a bit of a spell afterwards where you could see their confidence grew and they were getting after them, but Spain just started dominating possession again, really breaking the lines, and looked like they're creating a lot of opportunities. Their goal was excellent, just well worked, and Sarabia has been really good on that right hand side, cutting in, always looking like a threat, hasn't he, getting that plate players. But they're not just being pedestrian and passing sideways. They look like they're going forward with the ball a lot more, which is nice to see, instead of just back forward, ticky-tacky.
That's the difference tonight, Stephen, because obviously they were a bit frustrating in the first couple of group games. Then the floodgates opened against Slovakia when they got the goals. But the criticism I felt was justified in just how slow and pedestrian they were. And it becomes predictable then, especially if you're camped 10 men behind the ball. That can be the easiest thing to defend if people are just playing in front of you and it's slow and predictable. But tonight they're playing, as Stephen said, between the lines, very fast, their movement, a lot of fluidity amongst them, chopping and changing in terms of the positions they're taking up as well. Morata, for me, the jury's still very much out, Damien. There was a couple of chances, one with a header, a great ball into the box by Ferran Torres, and he should have scored. If anything, it was going wide and he headed it onto the defender. So he would be one that I'd be worried about. But looking at them tonight and what we've seen so far in the tournament, and it is hard to judge because we're nearly going game by game rather than actually team's form. And we were having a chat off air about it as well in terms of seeing a winner. You can't really only go game by game at the moment, because effectively knockout football, it's whoever turns up on the day. And looking at Spain tonight, I wouldn't have said this after the group games, but looking at them tonight, I give them a real chance.
It is, like, that is a common theme, Stephen, across the weekend, that, you know, everyone looked at, oh, Portugal, they've come through the group of death and they've hammered teams and they've done this and they've done that and they've done everything else and they're going to go on, and then they depart. That it is, it is that reminder to you that it's about staying alive for the knockout stages, and then it just starts all over again, doesn't it?
And then just staying consistent at those stages. You look at the Netherlands as well, like they played so well in the first half of the game, and then bang, goal goes against you, man sent off, and they were just scrapping and they lost all control of what they were doing. They just stopped doing the right things and it just completely changed. So a lot of teams that were tipping and were thinking, you know, they've got a good chance, they've been knocked out. And then you look at the teams like Denmark, who are just going from strength to strength. Mm. The way they played was unbelievable tonight.
But there is something happening there, isn't there? Like, and we can be romantic and we can be excessively romantic about how things are going to go, but for what that group of players had to experience on the opening weekend, you just do get a feeling that the planets are aligning for them.
For them to get through the way they did, just with one win and 3 points, and you know, in tournaments before that wouldn't have happened, it's almost like it was waiting for them to, after that, just to get to that next stage. But then in the manner they did, the way they beat Russia was unbelievable, but then their performance the other night was just excellent, like all over the pitch. There wasn't a single player you could fault, and then the substitutes that came on were just giving him much of an impact, like Cornelius, who I thought not a great player, but people are bouncing off him, he's flying forward, and just all over the pitch they just like a real, they're such a solid side. And like I said, there's nothing like what's happened that's ever going to make them more galvanised as a unit than what they've done now.
I think, Damien, as well, the crowd also, obviously it's not just the team and the players, I think the crowd who were obviously in the stadium that day and witnessed what we all did, which was horrific, but that's even brought the nation together, if you can do that. And the momentum that they've built up, as Stephen says, I know that half of the draw people are suggesting whoever wins the big game tomorrow night with England and Germany that they'll be able to stroll through to a final, but I wouldn't fancy playing Denmark right now at this moment in time.
You'd fancy them to beat Czech Republic?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I just think the quality they've shown, and it's funny because you don't think too much about them, and obviously, you know, we've seen them a lot over the last few years, almost every group game we've had them, so we know them well.
It's like the two teams,
and Wales as well, Wales, thrown in there. It was like, I was talking to people about saying if we played in the CONCACAF we'd still have Denmark. just unreal, like how often we played them. But then when you actually break it down, you look at where those players are playing, at the standard they're playing at, and how often they play for their clubs, there's a reason why they're there. They're really good players that are playing at such a high standard, and they're all playing at such a level, but the energy levels they're showing and that extra bit of determination and grit that they've got is just pushing them through as well.
Just to look at some of the other results, well, actually, just a word on Wales. Feel sorry for how it ended, or basically, has natural selection taken over and we've seen ultimately what their level was at?
Yeah, I think so, Damien. I wouldn't feel sorry for the way it ended whatsoever. They were well beaten. I think it was they've exceeded expectations actually getting through, to be honest with you, because that was a tough group. When I looked at that group initially, Turkey, Italy, Switzerland, I had Wales as going out in the group stages. I never thought they would have came through, but to be fair, they played very well in a couple of those group games and got themselves into a position where they did qualify. But against Denmark, they were well beaten the other day, and they have no complaints. And I think, to be fair to Rob Page, I know they were suggesting the second goal was a foul, and it probably was, but they can't have any complaints over the course of the 90 minutes whatsoever.
We were chatting, you know, as men of our age tend to do, about memes and GIFs and other stuff that you see on social media, which is, what else would you expect us to be talking about 5 minutes before we go on the radio? The one at Bale is very funny, you know, he's trying to, have you seen the one?
Oh, I didn't see that, no.
Oh, there's a great one doing the rounds. I'll have to try and find it for you now.
You're the king of the memes.
I'm the king of the memes, where he's basically like, it's a team huddle and he's in the middle of it. You can see he's really irate and he says, lads, I missed 2.5 weeks of golf for this. So
my
heart is with him. Okay, so Denmark then, Stephen, you fancy them to go on and do a job in the Czech Republic. Italy 2-1 after extra time against Austria over the weekend. Like, I have it on tape. I tipped them on Radio 1 with Claire Byrne a couple of weeks ago to win it. No pressure, lads. But like, they made hard work of it, but they got there in the end.
Well, that's the point. To go back to the initial conversation, Damien, about how we were fancy maybe at the earlier rounds, I was mad about Italy after the group stages. They were the most impressive team. They were absolutely brilliant in the group stages. I loved everything about them. Again, you're speaking about unity and spirit and the momentum they had built up. Bonucci came out afterwards, and for him to say what he said in terms of it being the best group of players that he's been with, for the spirit amongst them, that was a hell of a statement, because the Italians are passionate, as we know, at the best of times. times, and for him to come out and say that, I felt it was really strong. But they got into the game against Austria, and we all probably gave Austria, we were probably a bit disrespectful to them, didn't give them a chance, but Italy made hard work of it. And if anything, they were quite lucky in the end, Damien, because Arnautovic header, I know we looked at back at VAR and it was slightly offside, but I thought Austria gave them a lot of problems. And in terms of the other teams that are looking at Italy going forward in the competition, because I even think all the other teams were probably looking at Italy after the group stages thinking this is the standard and this is what we have to beat. And I know they're unbeaten in so many games and have a brilliant record, but they haven't really beaten anyone of note or any of the top nations. Now, to obviously win this, they're going to have to do that. They're also on the tough half of the draw. I think they play Belgium in the next round. So for all the optimism after the group stages and how much I really fancy them, I've kind of wavered back just a little bit, Damien, and I'm not as gone on them as I was after the group stages.
But they now play a Belgium side. It's confirmed Hazard is out, De Bruyne is out.
Yeah, unbelievable. But they still have Lukaku, who knows those defenders inside and out. So a man who, I know, the other night he probably wasn't at his best, but he still causes problems. He's improved so much when he's gone away. His touch is bringing people into the game, and yeah, you know, you're going
to
miss two.
It's amazing
players.
The transformation from the United Lukaku to what we've seen at Inter Milan, isn't it?
Controlling the ball, passing it, setting people up. Like, he's like a changed person. Like, the fact that you play into him, they feed off him. He actually is a target man that brings people into the game. But not only that, he's got pace to burn behind. He's strong. But this, the Belgian team without those two, like Hazard, looked sharp at times in the game today. It was the first time you're watching me think, you know what, he's turning on a 6 minutes, those little knee turns and driving away from people, and then for him to be gone, and De Bruyne, who's just been sensational all season, you know, trying to replace them is going to be hard.
You forget Lukaku's only 28.
Here's one for you. We had a chat last week.
Watch, sir, I have the benefit of it should be on your screens in front of you as well. So I have the benefit
slightly
of
head.
Having the massive television straight.
You think we have eyes in the back of our head, or Damien?
You lads have to
I
watch.
Know when we played.
You lads have to watch on the RT player. So here comes the goal on the screen now. So Spain has scored a second. I won't let you do a George Hamilton on this, but basically we did expect Spain might pull on, and that's a soft enough goal for Croatia to
concede. It is, yeah, but I'd admire the run from Azpilicueta. He's actually taken it out of defence and carried on his run the whole way up the pitch, Damien, and for him to get on the end of the cross, it is poor defensively because he has a free header effectively in the middle of the goal just outside the 6 yard box, but a brilliant team goal and him getting forward. I say I'm mad about Azpilicueta as well. I really like him at Chelsea. Brilliant player, brilliant professional, driving the team forward. I couldn't believe he didn't start the first game for Spain as well. I was really surprised at that. I didn't know was he carrying an injury, but again, since he's come into the team, there he is, I say, in the 6 yard box, and a great finish, and it was coming. Croatia looked beaten, to be honest with you, Damien, and Spain, as I say, like we're again, that conversation about who do you think could win it, looking at them tonight, I give them every chance now going forward. They're very, very strong.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more to Azpilicueta. I absolutely love that guy. Just when you see him for Chelsea, he's so dogged and determined. Every time he plays, he gives 110%. Like, I know it's such a cliche, but he really does. And then he's got loads of quality going on top of that, but just a great player all around. And to see him scoring for them is wonderful, I think.
Okay, so let's fast forward then ever so slightly. So the winner of this game will play the winner of France against Switzerland. You're on duty for that later on this evening, Stephen. How finely balanced is that?
It is balanced, but I do think France Pippa, I think the quality they've got, and they've not been firing up front as much as you would have expected them to do with that front three, who just on paper, you just think it's just scary, isn't it? Mbappe, Benzema and Griezmann. But what I've liked about them is this competition is really epitomises the team effort, the effort of working back, tracking back. Griezmann, some of the tracking he's done in for the games before, I'm thinking, I've never seen the office of him. It's just getting back, determination. And I just think when they try all together, but then you put in goal on Kante, and I think you could put him into any team in this group and they'd have a chance of winning this tournament. I absolutely love him.
Isn't it amazing that a guy who has won what he has won, has achieved everything that he's achieved, you only really feel it's this season people are actually standing up and going, this guy's up there with the best in the world.
Yeah, maybe, Damien, yeah.
Like there has to be a strong case to be made that he is the most undervalued, underrated player in elite football at this stage.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. And I suppose,
like,
as you said, considering all he's achieved, but yeah, I don't know why that is. I think a lot of the time is the flair players and the glory players get all the headlines, obviously scoring goals or whatever the case may be, and he does a lot of that unsung dirty work that probably goes unnoticed with a lot of people, especially if you're not as good as him at doing it. It doesn't go unnoticed with him for me because he's so good at it that he just sticks out like a sore thumb even doing that stuff. So I don't think you could say it's donkey work or unnoticed work, because he seems to be everywhere on the pitch when he plays. He had such an impact, obviously, in the Champions League final as well, so maybe that's where a lot of the plaudits are coming from. But he's just a brilliant player. And even to go back to the Lukaku conversation, I don't know, Stephen, what you think about this, but I mentioned a couple of weeks ago here, Damien, about... And I don't want to veer away from the Euros, but I give Pogba a lot of criticism, right? This world-class tag that I keep hearing about Pogba, I don't see it every week in the Premier League, and I give him a lot of criticism. Playing for France, it must be Johnny Pogba, because he's a different player, right?
Does that not say something then about the club culture?
But this is the point I'm getting to, right? And we mentioned Lukaku, and Lukaku playing under Conte at Inter, and the demands that he's put under with a top-quality level manager. Whereas I go back to, again, with Man United, with Solskjaer, and he's not been put under demands, obviously, under a Solskjaer. Whereas you look at him under Deschamps at France and the players that he's playing with, he's a different player. He looks the world-class player when he's playing with them. The same with Lukaku, as I say. When he was at United, he never looked the same. He goes to Inter Milan, he's transformed into a different player.
But sorry, can I expand that then slightly? It has to be more than the manager, because how many managers have gone through Paul Pogba, Lukaku?
No, but at Juventus under Allegri, an elite level manager, he was amazing, Pogba as well.
Yeah, but if it's the same thing has happened with the same player at the same club with multiple managers.
It's only happened at United. It hasn't happened at Juventus. It hasn't happened when he's playing for France.
No. But my point, sorry, I will explain it. Sorry, I'm not explaining myself properly.
No, you're not.
It has happened at United. I think people probably understand what I'm talking about. You're not picking me up, right? It has happened at United under Solskjaer, under Mourinho, under Van Gaal. So I'm not a manager.
It's a club. You think it's a club thing?
It's a club culture issue.
Something about why him at Manchester United. Maybe going back there, the pressure.
But the Mourinho thing and him, they just fell out.
Yeah, but then okay, explain to me then why it hasn't happened under Ollie, Son of Gunnar Solskjaer.
I do think
I just don't think Solskjaer is at that level.
But is that an issue of some culture around the club where you come away to the international setup?
I think it's systemic as well to player as well. I'm going to go back to N'Golo Kanté. I genuinely think that if you have him beside you, the freedom Pogba gets, you know, sometimes at United where he won't run back or he's a little bit lazy at times, he gets away with that.
Yeah, but there's times, Stephen, and you think back with United, right? All through the games and the season, they always play with two sit midfielders. He has that licence and freedom. What does he want? Another third fella sitting beside him?
I don't know, but I just think that...
And he never stands out.
The quality, like when you have someone in there that does it so well, and then when they get the ball back, they're happy to give it to you and allow you to be in advanced positions. They'll always find them in the ball. And he just looks like a much more confident player in the French setup. Like he's trying passes, he's back heeling, he's doing everything, and it's coming off for him as well.
Do you get that point then? That is there something, what is it about the Aon Training Centre or Old Trafford or whatever it is that he can't do it within that culture?
Yeah, it could be the fact that United, you just don't know. Maybe it is that environment that doesn't suit his style of play or doesn't get the best out of him as a player. But yeah, he does look like a different animal completely, doesn't he, for France. And he's won the World Cup with them, you know, and he was excellent
at
that as well.
And that's what always frustrates me, because everybody goes on about it in terms of... For me, the world-class fella is De Bruyne when you see him every week at Man City, right? That's the standard we're talking about, doing it week in, week out. When people talk about Pogba, I don't see that standard at United. And I'd love to, because we see him at France and he's delivering on the highest stage of them all when he's with his country. Now, obviously, he's playing with a better calibre player maybe, but still, if he's as good as people are saying, he should be doing it week in, week out.
The big one of the week that we're all interested in, invested in, is England against Germany. Mm. Just to think, we could have been in the Aviva Stadium tomorrow evening watching this if things had played out differently. Gareth Southgate has confirmed in his pre-match press conference that both Mason Mount and Ben Chilwell can rejoin the squad from midnight tonight after doing their isolation. There's an awful lot of talk that Mount is going to come straight back in, despite the fact that he's been in his hotel room for the last couple of days. Surely you can't throw a fella straight back into a game of this magnitude, can you?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, absolutely.
He's as good as Mason, man.
Absolutely. There's no reason not to play. It's not like he's been injured for months. He's still been training, and he's been training in isolation. They've been in a group for a long time. Gareth knows him inside and out. He's played so much this season. There's not going to be an issue with him coming back in whatsoever. And I think he's been excellent for them as well. So I think he's a really important player.
What do you make of the criticism? Not even criticism, it's okay. The excessive, disproportionate focus on every single thing he does.
It's the country that he's managing. That's all it boils down to, Damien. I think he's handled everything brilliant. I think Southgate... The only little bit of criticism I would have for him, and I'd love to see it tomorrow, because I think the build-up to the tournament, the expectation, I think he handled everything really, really well, because like it must be impossible to manage that standard of player that they have at the moment, and also have a media with the expectation that's on them, and to be able to balance that out and try and dampen it down a little bit as well without everybody getting way above their station. Now, because of the draw, the way it's played out, I'd say people are getting above their station, and especially if they beat Germany, they lose the run of themselves altogether and they'll think they have the tournament wrapped up. But to be fair to Southgate, I think he handles the media so well, Damien. But the only criticism I would have, the last game taken off Grealish, it was just a little bit defensive and a little bit conservative. Now, we could go back to the earlier chat about...
Is that not tournament football?
Exactly, and that's where I think he's handled things really well. But I'd love to see against Germany tomorrow. You're talking about Mount coming in, let the shackles off and away to go. And I think if they go after Germany and play on the front foot with the intensity that they can play and the quality that they have, I think they'll beat Germany.
So it's going to be street parties, it's coming home.
Oh,
COVID
be ridiculous.
Spikes in a few weeks' time.
Not looking forward to going back there if they beat Germany, to be honest.
But they have an unbelievable chance of winning it, don't they?
Honestly, the players, like I've been at Villa with Jack Grealish, right, for about 8 months training there when I was
How good is Grealish?
He is out of this world.
But you have had a chat with him, Stephen.
He is. Have a chat with him. Yeah. I tried to convince him about 100 times.
And how many years ago was that, Stephen?
That was 2.5-3 seasons. I just ruptured my Achilles. I was getting back fit. Steve Bruce invited me over to Villa to train. So I was about 8 months in there with them. But I was training week in, week out. And man, I remember one of the lads from Arsenal 21s from Reading, Pierce, saying to me, Jack Grealish is the best player he's ever seen. I was like, you know nothing. You're only 19. Yeah. You know what I mean? Thinking... Honest to God, the guy
Damien, he's phenomenal.
He's phenomenal. Like he's unbelievable. And I just think if they can get that right, you said, off the shackles, just let them have it, go it, and sit with a player in there like someone like a Declan Rice. You don't have to put two. I think you can afford to have more than that.
So England to beat Germany.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then Sweden against Ukraine.
He strikes me as he's a bit safe, Southgate, right? And you say the tournament football, and he's trying to balance everything and manage everything, and that's fine. But he has to find room. What you said about Mount, right? Mount will come into the team because he knows what he's going to get out of Mount. He's reliable, he's solid. He'll give you 8 out of 10 and he's a brilliant player. Sometimes you might look at Grealish. I think Southgate looks at Grealish and thinks he's a bit of a flair player. That can be a myth as well. He works really hard.
I think it's what Southgate has in his head, it's that off the ball ethic. I think he thinks Jax doesn't press as well, or he doesn't trap back as well. I think that's what the issue is. And based on, you see Southgate's comments after the game, how highly he spoke of Saka after the match, and saying how that he was so close to playing and in the group and training, but then Jack Grealish is like, yeah, he put in a really good cross for the goal. I'm thinking he's not going to play him.
Yeah,
I don't think he will play him.
I don't think he will.
Okay.
Yeah.
So England will beat Germany in your mind, and they will play the winner of Sweden against Ukraine. Will be
Sweden, I think Sweden.
That's the poorest
of the
poorest
games. I fancy Sweden.
So England will beat whoever. It's when England get to the semi-final, if they do, and they're playing Denmark, that's when
it's going to be tested, yeah. But Sweden, you know, good friend of mine, Seb Larsson, plays for them, and he's still going strong, 37 years of age. Unbelievable.
You're in here chatting to us, Stephen.
Yeah, I know. It's dreadful.
Fair enough. There's a few League of Ireland clubs, Stephen, if you were interested, you know.
I'll fix you up, no problem.
Oh, yeah.
Callie, have me back.
Few contacts.
I was thinking of one now. I've got a very specific one on the north
side.
Well,
your team needs after the weekend's result. Our team were going to win the league, Damien.
Yeah, I was wondering, it took 25 minutes for Callie to bring up the fact
ever.
That Sligo Rovers
at the weekend.
Before goals to
anywhere, nil. Anyway, I was...
best performance I've seen from Sligo Rovers team in a long time.
Have a meeting in the corridor beforehand and say, let's wind this fellow up.
They were absolutely phenomenal. Young Johnny Kenny, a little star in the making.
Yeah. You explain that to my 9-year-old who was as high as a kite after watching Bowes win the derby on Monday, and then had to watch that then on...
Look at that save, sorry Damien, from the keeper. So he's definitely saved his blushes, as I say, from the earlier one. And he's, look at that unreal save. Croatia should have scored. Brilliant save from Simon. Spain 2-1.
Stephen, as it stands, your favourite for the, like, again, and I know we shouldn't even really be speculating or trying to do it because so much can happen over the course of it, but the team to beat as it stands is
France.
Okay, Alan.
I actually think England, I said from the start, England have a great chance. The way the draw has opened up for them, I'm going to go England.
Stato out the window. Laura Lee,
she is
seriously now. She's telling me Italy are going to win.
Italy were brilliant in that.
I was about to give you credit for feeding me information that I could have passed off as my own, but I'll give you the credit you deserve. So Pedri's own goal, 49 yards.
Okay.
Longest ever own goal in the European Championships, and it's the first one ever from outside the box.
But the problem is, right?
First, he's made history.
But he'll go down as an
own. Alan, will you relax for a second? The man has made history on two fronts, the largest, longest distance, and the first one outside the box, and you don't even want to acknowledge it.
No, because. it's irrelevant that like that he
in years to come
pass.
It's
the goalkeeper's mistake. It's not Pedri.
And your mate Azpilicueta, first goal for Spain in his 27th cap. He's the oldest ever goal scorer at the Euros.
How is he only 27
caps? What?
That's wrong.
That can't be right.
Are you doubting Laura Lee?
No, I'm not.
You have to walk out
the door. I can't believe he only has 27 caps.
That's shocking,
isn't it? Respect, you know, like, jeez, lads, this is a denigration of responsibilities.
I actually, here's one. I'm going to throw Spain into the mix now after tonight's performance. It'll be very good.
Okay.
Are you looking for own goals? Look at John Anarisa scored one. Unbelievable. The best own goal you've ever seen.
John Anarisa.
Yeah.
Remember Lee Dixon's one about 20...
Over Lob David Seaman. That was brilliant. Jimmy Traore, Liverpool against Burnley.
Ah, that was
Bambi.
Fighting with his legs.
Yeah. It begs the question. How many own goals in your career?
Zero, I think.
Seriously?
Yeah, I think so.
Alan?
Oh, well, I was never even back
there. You were never
back
there.
Still standing up the front of the pitch. He was offside.
He got a nosebleed when he went anywhere near his own defensive box.
What's defending?
Yeah, come here. Before I let the two of you go, we often talk about sporting highlights on a Monday or, you know, significant achievements. Here's one for you. Ross Casey, young lad, pitch and putt player, got involved in a pitch and putt scramble competition with his club at Garvan Pitch and Putt in Kildare over the weekend. Set a new club and course record for a man of his age. 3 holes in 1.
No way.
In one round of pitch and putt.
Wow.
That's ridiculous.
Ross Casey.
There
remember
you go.
The name.
There's a name for the future.
Remember the name.
Are you allowed? You golf, do you?
No.
Were you allowed golf as a football? Like, things you're prohibited from doing is golf.
Golf was one that I got prohibited from at sports because I went to cross when I was a kid and my mum and dad going across gave me a golf set and then the guitar going across, like, filled your time in. And we used to go to drive range after training and just smash balls for ages. And I was getting quite good. I came in one day in training and I was like, oh, I'm a bit sore here, my hip. And they were like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, oh, scan me, I tore my hip flexor.
From golf,
and they said that was it. I was banned. So
that was a sign of things to come.
Was
with the
like, did David James not miss the tail end of a season at one stage because he'd like repetitive strain from playing his computer game?
Oh, there was definitely something with him.
Dave Besson broke something in his foot from dropping a jar of mayonnaise or something on his. You hear these things happen all the time.
They're normal people, Damien.
Yeah.
They were normal things.
Sure, as he's standing there in front of us. Yeah. Stephen, enjoy the game tonight. Stephen's heading off as part of... actually, before I let you go, another goal. So Spain... Oh, no, offside. So we can relax there. Stephen is part of RTE's coverage on the TV tonight of that game between France and Switzerland. So good luck with that. And involved in England against Germany tomorrow, which is the big one as well.
I know, can't wait. Cheers. Thanks for having me again, lads.
Stephen Kelly joining us in studio. Alan's going to stay with me. We're going to keep a keen eye on... events between Croatia and Spain. It's actually most entertaining for Luis Enrique. They keep cutting the camera to him. He's losing the head.
He's dressed like Stephen as well.
He's dressed like a fella. There's obviously a nightclub nearby because Enrique is ready to hit the dance floor.
Here's the question. You like these type of questions, Damien, right? And I often have
normally
this,
when I'm asking them, but go on.
I often have this chat with my dad. On the sideline, managers and coaches, suit, track suit.
I'm a suit man.
Do you ever see the style of Mancini?
Yeah, I just think, like, but then you couldn't imagine Jurgen Klopp in a suit.
But I think he should be wearing a suit.
But he'd look so odd in it.
Yeah, you know? And look at Pep. Pep used to always wear the suits. He's gone away from it.
Sure, Pep looks like a fella who's just wandered in off the street.
Him and Enrique.
Out doing the shopping with the whip misses on a Saturday morning, turns up 5-3 for the game.
When you're as good as him, I think you can wear what you want.
That's all about the players. Right, 51552 for your text at Game On 2FM. We'll get us on Twitter. We're chatting hurling after this.
New cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. Sorry. Go on, you tell them what we're laughing about.
I'm sure people saw it, but Laura Lee's bang on as always, and she's after sending a picture of, while we're talking about fashion, pundits fashion. And I like this, Damien, you know, I don't mind the old pundits fashion, but Robbie Savage was dressed like, I don't know, on Saturday, like something that was dressing up for a fancy dress party going to a football match. It was the worst I've ever seen. Did you see the picture?
10 seconds before I go back on the radio is not the time to be looking at it, but, you know, to each their own.
Well, yeah, good luck to them, yeah.
Anyway, right, we better press on. We are going to reflect on the Gaelic Games weekend with a man who's always dressed well, I hope. Niall Moran, how are you?
I'm dressed anyway.
This time of the evening, that's all we can ask for.
Yeah.
You know, we don't ask for much, and thank God it's radio. How are you?
Klein is brilliant altogether. Jesus, a great week if you're from Clare, great week of fun promised, and a great win after yesterday.
You're talking them up already. You see now, there's
see,
people.
See, Damien, Clare fellas on, Sligo fellas on. We're all happy.
I've a vested interest, Damien, so I'm going to have to try and pitch them in some shape or form.
Okay, right. Well, come here. Let's reflect upon it then. Clare 122, Waterford 21 points to build up a meeting with Tipperary in the Munster semi-finals next weekend. I think to paraphrase John Milan, who was on the radio yesterday, never has what looks on paper to be a tight scoreline been such, you know, a one-sided game. It really should have been miles more.
Yeah, it should have been. I remember thinking about 40 minutes in, I said, thank God I don't bet in these matches. Jesus, if you're holding on to the handicap bet or anything like that, I say you're biting your nails. Look, I suppose first and foremost, fair play to Clare. I don't think for a lot of people maybe outside their camp that they weren't really giving them a chance, which wasn't really fair based on their results maybe over the last 2 years, to be honest, because they have had a lot of very, very good results that they don't seem to have gotten much credit for. Above all else, I think it was just the total honesty in their application and their attitude in each and every play that they made, each and every player. And to be honest, if I was the manager, Brian Nohan, I'd be so, so proud of my men, because really they gave it their absolute everything. I think they maxed out in the latter cases, and I suppose as a manager in any sport, that's all you can ever ask for.
But the challenge then is, it's okay, it's one thing to do it on the opening weekend, it's another thing to do it when you've got Tipperary coming down the tracks within a week. Like, you know, how do you reach that level of intensity 2 weeks running?
Yeah, I think that is really the main question that they're going to have to ask. I'm sure in a lot of the commentary yesterday they were talking about score taking and option taking. Like, the reality of it is, look, you can't really change a whole pile in terms of taking scores in the space of a week. Shooting is something that comes naturally to people, and the more you think about it, the harder the process comes. Well, something similar to maybe putting in golf. So I think really they're going to have to set that challenge for themselves. But I'm sure they're looking at it and saying, well, do you know what? That Tip team isn't the Tip team of old. And so if we can get a grip on them, that we may have the physicality and the legs to go at them and go after them. And I think that's what they will be setting to themselves. And do you know what I mean? When your gander's up, like, all they want now is matches and let them come quick and fast. And do you know what? Like, they have a game behind them yesterday which will do the world of good for them. But look, again, Waterford kind of went a little bit into it, a little bit blind, really. I think them subconsciously they might have been looking a step further, and it was foolish given the recent records between the teams, because Clare would have had no fear of playing Waterford yesterday.
No, hang on, was for 1 second, Alan, a third goal for Spain.
Yeah, Ferran Torres, that's it, game over, Damien. As I say, Spain have been really, really good, really impressive, probably the best I've seen them in the tournament. Croatia look out on their feet at this stage. Obviously they were underdogs coming into this, and they've been well beaten, Damien, despite the early mishap from the goalkeeper. They've been well beaten. Spain have been totally dominant in 3-1. Game over.
78 minutes played. Alan's watching that for us. Just now back to it. Just a word on Waterford. That, okay, you know, the safety net of having the qualifiers is there for them, unlike in the football championship. But I suppose the challenge for Liam Cahill and everyone is not just to lift the heads, but to try and get a significant spine of the team back fit in order for those qualifiers when they run around very, very quickly.
Yeah, look, obviously they went out with our three key players and down the middle there yesterday, and so you could add Stephen O'Keefe to that. And even, you don't hear too many people talking about Parga Mahoney. You know what I mean? He's out as well at the moment. So look, they were missing the spine of their team, but I think you could kind of sense it in Liam that there was a little bit of real frustration and anger with these boys, because it was as if maybe he saw the challenge coming. And it kind of read as if he probably felt maybe that they weren't at the pitch going into it, and all his maybe worst fears came home to roost. But they do have they have 3 weeks to try and rally the troops again. And look, they at the end of the day, they can also look at it from another point, that they only hurled for one quarter and still were within a score coming down the home stretch.
Okay.
So but the only thing is, it does, in terms of silverware, like, that Waterford team, they would have liked to have gotten a chance of winning some silverware, and it just makes it a little bit harder to get that All-Ireland.
Yeah.
Like,
you have to go all the way now. So it's Tip against Clare next Sunday, Limerick against Cork in the Munster semi-finals on Saturday, semi-finals in Leinster next weekend as well. Dublin beating Antrim 3-31 to 22 points to set up a game against Galway. And I think a lot of people surprised at the nature of this, that, you know, okay, Dublin went into it as favourites, but if there was to be a surprise or a scalp across the weekend, Antrim fell short of what expectation would have been on their shoulders.
Yeah, possibly. I suppose, look, when you look at the National League, I suppose the two teams that really disappointed the most were Dublin and Wexford. And both of them obviously had resounding wins at the weekend, and they really came out all guns blazing. But I suppose you'd have to take into context the opposition in both cases. Look, Dublin, look, they had a nice win. Shot the lights out again from play. John Ronan Hayes had a fine game. The only thing is, there are going to be concerns. Like, Liam Rush had a fine game, yet his man probably got 6 points in play from centre forward. And he had probably someone like Conor Whelan and Kyle Manning coming in next Sunday. And, like, do you know what I mean? I still can't see beyond Galway, because, again, they were caught maybe 2 years ago against Dublin, so they have been forewarned. I think what was a little bit more interesting was Wexford. Ultimately, Wexford do have a very good crop of players. They will see that last year left them, they kind of left it behind. And just seeming to look at the ruthlessness of the likes of John Rory O'Connor there, you got 1-7, John Connor McDonald, they've taken him out from full forward. I think that's a masterstroke, because sometimes he's been left isolated in there and the games are passing him by. When he goes out half forward, he's expected to get into it, and he put 2-4 from play at the weekend. So I really think for both Wexford and Dublin, this weekend is really a D-day for them. Especially, okay, in the case of both the managers. I think if both of those teams can't get a win, then you might see another kind of a changing of the guard in both of those counties. But Wexford is an interesting one. Wexford and Kilkenny is really the most interesting game in my book next weekend, because Wexford would feel that they have the artillery to beat Kilkenny. And if they got that win behind them, they're now heading into a Leinster final and beyond with huge momentum.
Yeah, it's and again... there's going to be so many side stories around that match in particular, you know, Davey against Cody and everything else, that it's amazing, you know, how quickly, okay, we're lamenting the loss of seven teams from the football championship, but we've got into the hurling championship, and very, very quickly, so many top quality games, but so many side stories are going to come upon us very, very quickly.
Yeah, I just kind of think it'll be interesting to see what suits the two boys are going to wear on Sunday, given the conversation after having who be the best dressed. Yeah, look, there is. The games are coming quick and fast. Apart from me, I haven't spoken to a couple of the footballers over the past couple of weeks. Like, I really would ask the question, did the GAA need to, it's definitely in the case of the footballers, need to abandon the qualifiers? And I know, look, in terms of the hurling championship, games are coming very, very quick. I know they're anxious to get the club's matches played or whatever else, but it's a really truncated inter-county season. And obviously then again, the fact that we had no supporters over the weekend, do you know what I mean? I think that kind of detracted from the championship as it was already. And again, the fact you're running it off so quickly, I just don't think it's been given the justice or the kind of been given the time that it kind of deserves. Mm-hmm. Just one other thing, Damon, that probably stood out to me over the weekend, that probably has over a couple of games, was the length of these water breaks. I think it's something that when they were introduced was initially supposed to be meant as a kind of a changeover with the water or whatever else, but like it's turning into a 3-4 minute break. I think it's kind of destroying the momentum of a lot of these games. I do think it's something that Jake could get on top of very, very quickly, just literally a change of ends, change of water. And I do think it can add to it a little bit more, because it's kind of taken away from, just when games are starting to get motor and they're stopped for a prolonged period longer than what it should have been.
And again, we can point to a couple of games in the football championship over the weekend. It has become now the game of four quarters, and the amount of teams that you see have a bounce from the water break to either half time or full time. And Kamir, you're eminently more qualified to talk about fitness and where these players are at, but it's probably, you know, physically not needed at this stage.
And no, and I suppose probably what it's doing is probably, I don't mean maybe undermining the training, but like you train so hard to have yourself in that position, maybe with 20 minutes gone in the first half of a match or coming down the last 15 minutes, whereas like you give a player of that ilk, maybe that 5 minutes, or that's not even 5 minutes, that 2 or 3 minutes, like they're coming back a different animal after it, like they're getting their wind back or whatever else. So look, I don't know what's going to be done about it at this stage, but it is something that, even see the club level there, it's definitely taken away from the games. I suppose, and another thing really to come back to, that I know was touched on by a lot of commentary over the weekend, was like the absence of fans. As I said, I even saw it there, some of the player management, like they had none of their family, or they hadn't a ticket for any of their family to go to the match. And it just, a part of me, it's kind of really, really galling to say that players are fellas who have given all their time to it, that we can't fit them into a stadium of 50,000. Yeah. I think, like, again, we tend to throw blame on people in the GAA, and we say the GAA are at fault for this, that and the other, but I think they've kind of taken too many decisions handed down to them, maybe too lightly at times. I think there was a time to stand up to it. Like, we have shown ourselves to be a fantastic organisation right the way throughout the pandemic. We mobilised our people. They went to the community. They helped. They served. They were frontline workers, in essence. And yes, now when we're coming to a situation where maybe half our population are vaccinated, we can't get people out to matches. And for a lot of people, especially where I am in a rural area, like, the summer is defined by going to champions and matches. And like, before it's too late, I really think someone should stand up to it. And I know, like, again, we all appreciate the situation that Method, etc., have found themselves in and what they're trying to deal with in terms of new variants, etc. But don't tell us that you can't even have 1,000 people, just even to cater for some of the players and management who've given John a massive amount of time in their lives to this. Like,
yeah, particularly when we're looking at Euro 2020 beamed into the studio here from Copenhagen in what's a virtually full stadium. So we will see what announcements come in the coming days. Niall, good to chat to you as always. Thanks for being with us.
Cheers, Damien. Take care.
Well, thanks very much. Niall Moran joining us there. 4 minutes left, Alan. Could we have late drama?
Yeah, we have a game, Damien. Maybe I wrote them off too quickly, Croatia, but they've showed a lot of character and they've come out fighting. They've got the goal, the second goal back. Orsic has just scored, so it makes for an interesting 5 or 6 minutes. And Spain will be kicking themselves if they don't get the job done here, because, as I said, they've been so dominant, they've been so good. But it's, as you said, it's become a little bit dramatic now for the last 5 or 6 minutes, and Croatia have given themselves a chance.
Sorry, just breaking news reaching me while we were in the middle of the chat with Niall. The Leinster Council has announced that 8,000 spectators will be permitted to attend the provincial senior hurling semi-finals at Croke Park.
Brilliant.
On Saturday.
That's good news.
It's amazing. I'm just watching here. The ball, like, we're looking at a display here that VAR creates or whatever, Hawkeye, whoever it is. It didn't look to be that far over the line, but the ref is satisfied that, you know, he got the notification on his watch. So it's, people, even when the technology tells you it's a goal in your favour, the Croatia players are going ballistic that the amount of time that's been wasted with it. So,
he gets the notification on his watch. So I've always, when the technology involved in the game, you know my feelings on VAR, David, we've discussed
this. We've only got 15 minutes of the programme
left. But the goal line technology is one of the best we've ever introduced, because it's black and white. It's over the line, it's not.
Except the night it didn't work at Villa Park.
The referee came out, look, he's human after all, and he made a mistake, but that was a shocker. But 99.9% of the time it works,
but the one time it doesn't. Right, anyway, more to come. We're going to chat the Gaelic football weekend with Aidan O'Rourke after the break.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide.
And you're welcome back to the programme. This is Damien O'Mara in the company of Alan Cawley. They're heading into the 90th minute. Well, they're in the 90th minute. They're heading into the 91st minute. They just have Croatia still trailing Spain by 3-2. 6 minutes of additional time to be played. So, Alan, we'll keep watching that. Fulham have confirmed, incidentally, that Scott Parker has left the club, which presumably clears the way for him to go to Bournemouth.
Good move for him. I like Scott Parker.
Within the next couple of days. Anyway, loads to reflect upon from the Gaelic football weekend. Aidan O'Rourke is with us. Aidan, how are you?
Good evening.
It's good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us. A lot of chat last night and again in the papers this morning talking about an underwhelming opening weekend of the football championship, which would almost lead you to believe in previous years we've had spectacular opening weekends, which has never been the case.
I was going to say, why would anybody be surprised? That has been the way for a number of years, and I suppose, listen, I don't know if you want to go down the rabbit hole of championship structures and all the rest, but there were quite a few games, particularly those with what would be the high profile teams, that were essentially one sided at the end of it all, weren't a contest. And I think that's probably what the neutral looking on is probably basing their weekend on. If you look at the games against the teams that are more evenly matched, there were quite a few good games of football over the weekend. But that doesn't necessarily catch the neutral's eye.
What's the standout result for you?
Well, I suppose the standout performance and result is Kerry. It's probably the one that you can take a wee bit of learning from in terms of what might happen later in the summer. Clare are a good team. It's only a couple of weeks since they pushed Mayo quite hard. Oof. Who are considered All-Ireland contenders in some shape or form. So for Kerry to score as heavily as they did and to minimise what Clare were able to do, I thought it was a pretty impressive performance.
Croatia have equalised against Spain in the 92nd minute. We'll get details on the goal from Alan in a second. So now sets up this semi-final against Tip, and you know, Kerry will probably feel from the weekend. I know, like, that you'll pay respect to all your opponents, but you know, they're up and running in great style, and a Munster title, Munster final, certainly well in their reasonable sights at this stage.
I really don't see Kerry having any trouble, assuming their mindset is as it should be, and there's no reason why it shouldn't, given what happened to them against Cork last year. The year that's in it, you know, there was a reasonable bit of preparation. It wasn't a full league, but they had a really good look at what they were going to do in the Championship over the course of those league games, and I just don't see Kerry being caught in Munster this year.
Limerick beating Waterford, could they do a job on Cork?
Yeah, that is a tricky one for Cork. Limerick, a lot of good footballers. They are they're a common team. They were caught out a wee bit against Derry in the league playoff semi-final. I don't think they quite saw what Derry were coming with. Otherwise, realistically could have been in Division 2 now. So I think Limerick are a common team, and I think Cork are going to need to be right on their game to negotiate that one. I think that's a 50-50 game for me.
Is there any point in us getting overly obsessed, or, you know, beyond discussing the results, mentioning the Mayo Sligo game? Because surely, you know, even the most ardent observers of Mayo football, there's not an awful lot you can take away from it.
No, and really there's not a lot you can take from their league campaign either. Which isn't very comforting for Mayo people. That's not to say that Mayo haven't progressed and aren't in a position to really challenge for both provincial and All-Ireland silverware. You know, they possibly are, but we haven't demonstrated that yet. There's a whole sort of backstory to this type of fixture where, you know, if you look at the pathway that players who are playing in Division 1 at the very top of our games now come through in terms of their exposure to coaching and opportunities to develop themselves, you know, that isn't the case evenly across the piece now. And, you know, these mismatches are only going to grow.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so quick word then on Ulster. You know, we've talked time and time again about it being the most competitive province to come out of, but you're going to have to take the long road if you're Donegal, having come through the preliminary round over the weekend, 225-112 over Down. You know, looked you know, impressive in patches, but again, is it fair or is it just lazy to question if they're overly reliant on Michael Murphy and how his hamstring is going to hold up over the course of the Championship?
Yeah, they're in a tricky position. The scoreline possibly is unfair to Down. They were right in the game until the goal just before half time, which you could argue was quite unlucky, and then, you know, fought back rightly after half time until the red card, and that ended the game as a contest, and Donegal coasted then to the final whistle. Murphy is key to what they want to do. It's okay beating Down in a provincial opener without Michael Murphy, but are they going to be capable of beating Tyrone, Monaghan, Armagh, and the bigger fish that they'll meet in Dublin if they're to get that far without Michael Murphy? I just don't see it at the moment. They have a lot of talented players. They have people who can potentially do with the ball what Michael Murphy can do, but do they have the people with the leadership skills and the understanding of the game in terms of when to stand up and when to get on the ball? I don't see that in them at the moment. So Murphy's going to be central to anything Donegal can do this summer.
Were they in a situation where they just had to play him at the weekend? I know you can look at it two ways. They did their business and then he departed the scene, but surely they could have had enough to get over the line and try and hold him in reserve and maintain his fitness for later on, or, you know, what's to come against Derry in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, I can only assume that they felt he was 100%, because if he wasn't, I really don't think they would have risked him, because Yeah. Listen, if you're talking to the press, or, you know, if you're building the mentality of the team up during the week, Declan Bonner was probably, you know, banging all the drums, and we have to be at 100%, and there can be no A off the ball or Down will beat us. I'm sure that was the message, but, you know, you need to step back, you need to look at the bigger picture, and if Murphy wasn't 100%, you know, you would have been seeing, couldn't you get the half time? You know, can you get to the second water break, and do you really need him? And if the answer is no, then you've got another 2 weeks to get him right. You know, so I can only assume that he was 100% going in, that he trained hard, and they felt there was no risk. But sometimes training is not the same as matches, and he definitely felt something. He didn't give them 25 minutes and come off. I was at the game. I watched him starting to struggle.
He didn't necessarily want to come off himself. So I think there's obviously some type of damage there, but it remains to be seen just how much.
And just before I let you go, Aidan, and time is going to beat me, wins for Offaly over Louth after extra time, Wexford over Wicklow, and Longford against Carlow in Leinster. Anything of significance for you?
Well, just that they were the best games of the weekend, you know, in terms of entertainment and a contest, you know, and I think there's a message in that for us in terms of what the championship structure should look like.
Just in terms, a round robin, let teams face off against other teams of a similar level and, you know, enjoy some competitive football.
Well, teams flourish against teams that they can, you know, match up against and potentially beat. You know, where the mismatches like Mayo against Sligo, with the greatest respect to Sligo at the moment, you know, you don't have contests, you know, you don't have an even playing field. So I think our championship structures need to reflect
and just
a bit of atmosphere.
A word as well on like seven teams gone, talking to Niall Carew and Tullamore yesterday, you've had 16 weeks work with the Carlow footballers, two championships, two defeats, and that's it. It's a very difficult situation, albeit in the most uncertain of times.
Totally. I think there was room to build a backdoor into what we're doing. There's enough gaps as we go forward here between games, and ultimately managers like Niall are in a situation now where there's no competitive football now for 7-8 months, and the opportunity to build on anything that they've done already is gone.
Aidan, thanks for your time. Aidan O'Rourke joining us there to look back on the weekend. Alan, we've gone to extra time in Copenhagen.
I feel bad. I feel really guilty, Damien. I had written Croatia off totally with 15 minutes to go, and it made me eat my words. Unbelievable comeback from them, and they scored in injury time, as you say. Pasalic, brilliant ball into the box by Orsic, great header. But I say Spain will be absolutely kicking themselves, Damien.
But dare I suggest momentum is now completely with Croatia.
Absolutely. You look at Enrique on the line, he looks crestfallen. You look at the players coming off, Sergio Busquets as well, he's absolutely devastated, and they look beaten, whereas Modric is coming off. And we must mention Modric, Damien, his 142nd cap tonight. We were saying here off air when they were losing 3-1 that this could be his last game. He's the most animated player coming off the pitch. When you think of all that he's won, he's celebrating more wildly than any other player, and just what it means to him. And they're going into the extra time, as you say, and all the momentum is with them now, and they could go on and win it. So it was unbelievable comeback.
Before I let you go, have you commissioned the statue of Johnny Kenny Jr. for...
Well, I love Johnny Kenny Sr. So he has to go a bit yet to go over Johnny Kenny Sr., but he's well on the way, I'll give him that much.
Just so you know, we were joking, brilliant result for Sligo Rovers, well deserved, beating Bohemians 4-0, breaks my heart to say it. But still, it's been a brilliant Premier Division season, brilliant, like another great weekend across the Premier and the First Division, and League of Ireland football is flourishing.
It is, yeah, and obviously Drogheda picking up a point as well on Friday night against Shamrock Rovers. So it's wide open, Damien. There's three teams on 35 points at the top. We have a proper title race this year, which is what we wanted. We didn't have one last year, even though it was a half season. And Bohemians, even though they got beat heavily at the weekend, I wouldn't write them out of it just yet, Damien. They've been, before that, they had picked up 13 points out of 15. They were the form team. If anything, it was a bit of a surprise that they got hammered 4-0, because as I say, they were the form team, and Sligo had only picked up 1 point out of 9 before that. They've been poor enough since the break, but it was an unbelievable result for Sligo Rovers. But we do have a title race, and that's what we want.
Okay, very briefly, I have the French team up on the screen in front of you. No massive surprises in terms of selection, but a lot of talk that Deschamps is going to completely tinker with his formation. Sorry, let me put it on your screen now. Is going to tinker with his formation, which is a really risky thing to do, you would think, heading into the quarterfinals of a major tournament.
It would be risky, but one of them that's come in there, Rabiot, has come in obviously at the left side. Hernandez obviously injured. Rabiot came on in the last game as well. Brilliant player, but doesn't normally play left full at his club. I think Switzerland will give them a game, Damien. Switzerland, okay. Good side.
All right, we'll
it won't
see
be as straightforward as people think.
Coverage of that and extra time in Croatia, Spain on RT2 television from all of us here. Until we talk again, good night. Thanks for your company, Alan.
Thanks
to Lorley Davis, our broadcast coordinator. Ronan Lawler produced. Tara's on the way from Damien O'Mara. Till we chat again, good night.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.